This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good, usually. But today, we have something a little bit different for you.
My name is Gabriel Urbina, and I am your first something a little bit different host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second a little bit something different host.
And my name is not Batman. It's Zach Valenti. But I am also your something a little bit different host.
And we're joined once again by the founder of 10 Productions, purveyor of great audio fiction programs such as Super Ordinary, S. Marissa Tannen. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again.
Yes, absolutely. After we survived Monday's episode with all that kindness and all that flavor, we definitely wanted to take a second to just talk to you a little bit about the work that you do in podcasting, in writing, in kind of creating things and being an active maker of media, particularly in the year of our alleged Lord 2020, when it feels so hard to do any of those things well and continuously. So why don't we start a little bit about just kind of like, what was the road that led you to audio fiction? Kind of how did you find yourself in the milieu of podcasting?
What mistakes did you make?
Oh, so many mistakes. I got into audio because I went to the Austin Film Festival in, it's 2020 now, right? So it would have been 2017. Mm-hmm. I was working in TV at the time, and then I submitted to AFF for TV pilot, that's what it was. And then they had a marketing campaign because it was the first year that they did audio fiction. And so when you submitted, you got a second email that said, hey, have you heard of fiction podcasts? You should submit the same idea or a different idea for as a fiction podcast script. So I was like, I don't know what a fiction podcast is. And I don't have one of those, but that sounds like a cool thing. And their submission fee was super low for the fiction podcast situation. So that was how I found out that fiction podcasts exist. I know there's like a new article every 3 weeks that's like, I invented fiction podcasting, but Austin Film Festival was how I found out.
Austin Film Festival invented fiction podcasting.
You heard it here first.
For me. Yeah. But yeah, so I submitted actually the first version of Super Ordinary for the fiction podcast thing, because I'd worked on it for a really long time in college as a concept for a novel. And then I was like, well, there's a lot of narration and single viewpoint, and that could work based on the things I had listened to and all that jazz. So I submitted, and then I got in. And so I went to Austin. And I think they still do this because I was there last year. But when I went for the first year, they did a really good job of matching you with like one-on-one meetings with podcasters who were there as panelists. That's the word. So I met with Jenny Turner Hall, and she was really cool and talked a lot about kind of working in podcasting, and they won a Peabody, I believe, for that as well. So it was a really cool concept to talk to her. I met Ashley Klotch, who does Deck the Halls.
Yeah.
That's where we met, and we stayed in touch. And she really, really pushed and encouraged me to work on actually doing Super. And then that's how we got started. I ended up I left the job that I was at. And then at that time, I was like, okay, well, as I look for a new job, I'll do this podcast thing. And then now I just do the podcast thing. So that is how it started.
Where did the concept for Super come from? So originally it was going to be a novel, but sort of how did you arrive at that particular take on superheroes?
Yeah. I love superhero stuff. I grew up on Marvel, like in the comics and in the movies, very obsessively. The only time I ever skipped school was my senior year to go to a full day marathon of every single one of the Avengers.
Oh, you've done one of those things. That's amazing. Well,
I did it when it was like the first Avengers. It was like reasonable at that point because it was
right. It was like five movies as opposed to 55. It wasn't
2 days.
No.
Without seeing the sun. Yeah.
Yeah. We missed the Hulk because I think I had a class in the morning that I had to go to and then I left. They can't stop me now. I don't know why I'm being like nervous about talking about it.
The programming runs
the
deep,
damage
man.
Is real. Yeah,
so bad. So we went, that is kind of like my superhero stuff, and I've always wanted to do something with superheroes, but it's also kind of one of those things where you're like, at every possible take of it has already been done. And been done so well, so how do you do it in a different way? And I went to Emerson, and I was in a writing class at the time. And I had been playing with the idea of doing something from the villain's perspective, because it's been done, but not as many times. So that was sort of what I wanted to do. And then I started having really bad panic attacks while I was in college. And I was in this class, and I was like, I was not certain what was happening, and like, it was not great. And then those affected my relationships, obviously, because you're dealing with that in general. And so then I kind of started playing with the idea of, okay, well, what if that is why this person's a villain? If you can't control what you're doing and the way people are perceiving it. So that's how it started out from there.
That's really cool. And it's really cool that it sounds like it jumped mediums until it found the right home. Is there anything that like you felt really had to change when you moved it into audio, or did it sort of slide in seamlessly?
So when I started it, it was like the concept of it was a book that was like a blog that was being told. So it was very like sort of Tumblr-esque. Like I had a big format of how the text posts worked with like visual posts and all that kind of stuff. So obviously that doesn't work anymore. But I think post season one is where the format really changed, because the story was still very similar from the original format, of sort of, this is a villain telling their side of the story. These are the events that already happened that the listener doesn't know happened, but the Annika is assuming, you know, that kind of thing from season one. But after season one, I realized that we could, with the new format, play with perspective a lot and switch and talk about sort of the hero's side of things, what their different versions of stuff was, what they were kind of struggling with. And then Camp Safe Haven is a totally new from audio portion of the show.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Absolutely. Now, you're not the only writer on Super, right?
I am. I am the only writer on Super. I've written.
I'm getting my notes mixed up.
Ordinary.
Okay, in that case, new question: how?
How?
Just how?
Well, so season one and season two, our production process was really weird. I would say maybe or not. I guess not weird, but just not how I guess most people have done it. We did season one and season two within a month of each other.
How?
So our first episodes, I feel like season one and season two are roughly 10 to 15 minutes each. And so, well, season one, I had pretty clearly already had and been working on for so long, that I took those moments and worked them into audio and worked them around the actors that we had chosen and all that kind of stuff. And we recorded season one in 2 days, like a weekend.
Wow.
And then I knew season two I wanted to do from the perspective of the heroes. So when we cast everyone for season one, we had everybody commit to doing both seasons kind of back and forth.
Great.
Yeah. So that was how we did season one and season two. And I do think there, I would say like season one I had been working on for years at that point, in theory, just in different formats. And then season three We also did that in 3 days. And season four, we just did in 3 days as well. So, season four, we had the longest break in between, because season three, we did like maybe 6 months. And then season four, we did a year later.
Right. That's 3 days, but after a gestational period.
Yes.
After sort of, you know, after sort of some time away from the thick of it to kind of reflect on it. How do you think the show has grown and changed since the early, early days of season one?
I would say that one of my biggest pet peeves about writers is like the How I Met Your Mother situation, where they had an end that they wanted to get to, and then things changed because actors came in, and then they just went to the same end anyway.
Yeah, you stay the course. You don't
pre-recorded those kids having one reaction.
Right, exactly. Couldn't. So God forbid.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would say I try really hard not to do that. So with the actors that we've had come in, our ending has absolutely changed. I sort of know what that ending is now, but I'm always open to something changing that. I'm trying to make sure I don't spoil.
It's so hard to keep track of what's out and what's not.
Well, right? Yeah. And I've listened to everything so many times. Well,
if you
I would
make
say
a decision and then months go by and you're like, that's old news. No. And then it's like, over. No, that's breaking news for the world.
What I will say is that we've had actors come in that have totally changed my plan for that character. So the best two examples are Anshu plays Justin in season one. I think he's in one or two episodes of season one. And I had never planned for him to be this big connected character to the rest of the heroes. But he came in and had so much fun with one scene in episode like five of season one, that there was just no way not to have him come in for season two and be sort of that flair. And now he's done quite a bit more with the show. And so like that character became a lot bigger. Cool. And then Brigham came in to play Harvey season three. And him and Mia have, this is not to say unprofessional chemistry, but they just have like a great time with each other. Yeah. So it makes that relationship so much more fun to write for. So right. I feel like at this point I'm writing much more to the actors than sort of amorphous characters, that are having a great time. So, and our episodes are longer in a technical format. That's how it's grown.
We don't know anything about that. It never happens.
It's never happened to anyone
never
ever.
Never happened to anyone ever.
No.
Especially if the actors seem like they're having fun, there's no temptation to increase the story length.
Of course not. No.
Yeah. Why would there be? No.
What are some of your favorite things about writing for audio? What do you think are some of the more fun things about the medium?
My early answer for when we were just doing Superordinary was I was like, I don't have to worry about budget at all. We can have a giant fight in New York. We can, there's no permits. There's no anything like that.
You can send someone to space.
Yeah, right? Why not? Exactly. Like you can do multi seasons of insane space stuff. But I think now that I've done it so much more, I really enjoy doing comedy in audio where you can't use physical comedy. Or you can, but it's such a different,
Experience.
Yeah. And when we did Sword and the Stoner, it was such a visual story, I think, in concept. And it's so reliant on comedy to so many different degrees, but working with the comedians or the actors that are comedic actors that we worked with for that show was so much fun to watch and kind of work through how like a punchline works in audio. And I think it makes your comedy so much sharper. So that's my favorite thing currently.
That's so cool.
Brilliant. Yeah. What about the flip side? What do you think are some of the challenges of writing for audio? What do you think are some of the hardest things?
I think it's like the same, almost. It's, I hate to use the same answer, but like you can't do visual gags. You can't do like little tiny moments of visual acting. I know I probably have characters say each other's names more often than I would on the screen. Mm-hmm. And things like that. So I think like, I think the one thing that I really don't like about audio is when we're in the studio and I watch actors reacting with each other visually and just getting these little tiny moments. And Mia often like gets one tear out or does the physicality of the panic attack so that you can hear them so well. But nobody at home gets to see that.
No. So it's and it feels like a sin to not be able to capture that in some way. Yeah.
Exactly. So I have like a nice, I have some nice cell phone videos of things. but yeah, I think that's, and Julia Morizawa for one has such a physicality about the way she acts. And so many little things. And I think it's necessary. Like you hear that in the audio.
Yeah, it absolutely tells.
Right. But it's just such a shame that I'm the only person who got to see it.
No, I remember that was one of the big things that I learned from Zach when we started to do Wolf 359 together of you have to kind of do the big physicality in order to capture the affectation and the voice. Like oftentimes kind of, it's easier and more effective and more genuine if instead of kind of going, oh, can you do that line a little bit warmer and a little bit softer in these ways? You just kind of go like, can you just like high five the person next to you before you say the line? Just kind of like, just like very quickly, just like pow. Right. Which is great. But then you're the only person that is there and looking at it and being like, oh, but that's such a great moment. That's such good interplay between these people. Where I remember there was a moment in Wolf 359 season 2 where Emma Sherjarko needed to sound really harried about a line. And so I think that we actually made her kind of like run into the room and like run across it and like land on her chair and then deliver the line. And it sounds amazing. But there's a part of it that is like, you're making Emma like dash into this room, which she's doing like a total boss. How is that not in the episode? And it's like, well, it is in the episode exactly as much as it can be.
Yeah, agreed. It is really fun, though, I think, when you do commit to like having them do the physical aspect of things. Like similarly, when we do big kind of fight scenes, sort of quote unquote, in Super Ordinary, like the actors do move and kind of like run about to get that sort of element in their voice. And I think when you commit to that, we have so much more fun in the recording and like when you can really hear the difference of even little things like Brigham often ends up having to eat like 4 croissants during our recordings because his character's always coming with his mouth full. But it's like a fun joke now, you know, but yeah. it just sounds so much better.
That is a lot of croissants.
It is.
I always like to ask people who have gone through the thick of it, what advice would you give your past self that hadn't started yet? Now that you have all this experience under your belt?
That's a really good question. And I wish I had like some sort of amazing answer for it. I think.
Have more croissants.
Yeah, more. Have croissants at all times. No, I think something that I really think is useful is to keep your head kind of down a little bit. Like I don't really go on our reviews or the internet a lot because there are certain things that are really personal to you. And I think when you do podcasting, it's so different than any other medium because you are like a one person show for a bit. So it's your job to write the thing, get the people together, do the thing and all of that kind of stuff. And then it also is sort of your job to get it out there, which can result in a sort of echo chamber of someone said something that you really shouldn't have seen and wouldn't have seen if you weren't doing, you know. And I think you can get really caught up in trying to do everything and then making those changes or allowing those comments to change what you want to do with your show. And it's hard because it's the internet. There's no
escape.
Yeah. It's going to happen. And it sounds like a kind of dumb YouTube don't read your comments answer, but
it's so true though,
you know what I mean? Yeah,
it's paralyzing. Well, and I'm imagining what it must have been like to, you know, I think like comparing what I project having heard them talk about it at length at Dragon Con, the production experience of Battlestar Galactica, and our much more modest Wolf 359, just like the difference between dealing with a studio and sort of putting it together before it gets seen versus like, or, you know, consumed, versus like, as we're in the production process, it getting feedback in real time from people. And of course, for season one, it was, you know, more or less dead silence from the other end. But as it became...
The crickets loved it.
Right. As it became more and more...
very strong feelings about it.
Listened to as it was being produced, that definitely became something that we had to reckon with. I definitely was not the best at keeping my head down. And second, that advice is, I think, essential for keeping sanity. The ghost. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, and also... That, oh, go ahead.
No, just that I know that some people ask kind of in response to that, like, oh, but isn't it important to like know what people are sort of finding in your show? And my answer to that are like, trust me, enough people are dead set on you seeing the problems they have with your show, and they will go so far out of their way to like make you see it. You do not need to go seek it. Like, you do not need to go sort of like looking on your own. It will come to you. Trust me.
I would also say the people who have negative feelings are much more vocal than people who have positive feelings.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. The positive things I've heard about our shows. I mean, there's positive things on the internet. I'm not saying that everyone's trolling every day. But the positive and the most like kind of heartwarming, exciting things I've heard have always been in person. Either at like conventions or with bar meetups or whatever. And I think especially the Super Ordinary, not necessarily everyone wants to talk about mental health on the internet very calmly. So most of our positive, amazing things that I've heard have been like meeting someone directly and talking about how the show affected them, versus negative people love the internet because you don't have to show your face or your name or be connected to it. You can just be me.
You.
Yeah. But I liked, Zach, when you were talking about the sort of network versus fan reaction and like notes. I used to work in TV development before I did this. So being on that side of things was actually a big reason why I tried podcasting instead of continuing to work in TV development. Because if you are on the other side of things, you will see things that you don't want to see. But a network note is so different than like a fan note. Like, in general, a network should be saying things that should make your show better before it's been put out, and it very often isn't going to be the note that you wanted to hear anyway, but it's still a note from someone who is invested in this being a success. So even if it's a bad note, which networks give all the time, it's still a note from someone that has invested money and time and resources into you being successful versus like a note that is coming, or a note coming from someone who just is consuming your thing for free and has no sort of
skin in the game,
personal investment.
Right. There's no incentive for them to want your show to be its best self.
Exactly. Yeah.
And their idea of what the show's best self is their idea, not necessarily at all shared.
Exactly. And I think people who want to find something bad are always going to find something bad.
Right.
And people who want to enjoy things are going to find a way to enjoy things.
Right. I think some people find enjoyment out of tearing things down, I think, is part of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I guess for the original question of like, what would you recommend for people like wishing you had known? I think the first, the sort of studio type of note is really actually helpful and great if you can find someone that can be sort of, if you're doing the one person thing, like season one and season two of Super Ordinary was sort of just me going and doing what I wanted to do. And if you can find someone who is going to be the person who reads things, pokes holes, if you have actors who poke holes and ask questions, I think those are the types of things that you should surround yourself with and be open to. Julia asked some questions that she really changed kind of the basis of her character and where that was coming from. And if you have people who are creatively willing to ask questions and challenge you, it'll make your work better. So I think it's really easy with podcasting to operate in a vacuum. But if you can find even just one person that isn't that sort of vacuum, that breaks that vacuum and asks questions, you'll have a better product in the end.
Awesome.
Phenomenal advice.
Thanks.
Alrighty, I think that with that amazing bit of advice, that is all the time that we have for this episode of No Bad Ideas. Marissa, thank you so much for being on the show and for sharing all of that and for making all of these awesome shows for people to listen to. Well,
thank you guys for having me. I had a good time.
It was an absolute pleasure.
Where can people listen to the new season of Super Ordinary and everything else that you put on the internet?
So Super Ordinary is on any podcasting app that you have. So search Super Ordinary in that. Or if you just want to find everything with handy dandy links, you can go to tandinproductions.com. And it's all there.
And we are going to include links to that in the episode notes for this episode, never fear. What about yourself? If people just want kind of like your thoughts and opinions and everything, where's the best way to get that?
If people would like to join my sleep-deprived tweets from time to time, I am Marissa Kumari, K-U-M-A-R-I, on Twitter and Instagram. You will find nothing poignant there, but you're welcome to come.
The best tweets.
Much
are the
like Twitter and Instagram.
Tweets.
Yes.
Wonderful. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on as a guest. And thank you all so much for listening to this episode of No Bad Ideas.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Jennifer Schneider, Rena Sarame, and Rebecca Allen. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.